Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to the iSports MSU Red Cedar Report, where we think Max Biefeldt could even play at Duke and still not stop losing to the Spartans. I am Tyler Hayward. The Red Cedar Report is part of iSportsWeb.com. Be sure to check out that website for the latest sports news and opinions. You can like us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter at Red Cedar Report. Today on the show, is it time to say goodbye to Aaron Harris as part of the regular rotation? Plus, we're also going to take a look at the Wisconsin game. But first, iSportsWeb contributor Matt Heppner joins me as we recap yesterday. I wrote this a couple days ago. As we recap the game against Indiana, Matt, how are you doing?
Doing good, doing good.
Like we always do, let's get your thoughts on the game.
Yeah, it was... I thought it was a really important performance for Michigan State on Sunday at Indiana. I was there covering the game for us, so I got to see it firsthand. But, coming off the tough loss to Purdue, they really needed a bounce-back performance, and they really needed to get back to doing what they had been doing, over the course of the last few weeks before that. And that was, just playing really well overall, both sides of the ball, and offensively and defensively. And then I thought that despite a little bit of a hiccup towards the beginning of the game, that's what they did for the most part. And, I think they really got back to playing, the Michigan State basketball. It's funny, when they were down in the first half, I think it was only 10 at the most. And right around the under four timeout, they were down 8. And, I'm seeing some stuff on Twitter, and it was classic overreaction theater. I mean, you're seeing people, I don't know why I even bother to watch this team. They're not tough. They don't play defense. They don't guard anybody. Well, from that point to the next 14 and a half minutes of game time, they outscored Indiana 34-9, took complete control of the game, and ran the Hoosiers out of the building. So I think it's safe to say that was a little bit of an overreaction there, because the game was not close from that point on, and Michigan State dominated. And, Izzo said it after the game that he thought that once they started tightening up the defense, that it led to better chances on offense. Mm-hmm. And both coaches talked about how important the fast break points were in the game, and I believe it was 22-9 in favor of Michigan State. And it was just great to see them be able to get those clean shots and good looks early on by pushing the ball, but it all started with getting good stops on defense.
Yeah, I mean, you talked about the overreaction. I'm surprised half of the Michigan State fan base hasn't torn their ACLs like their Delvon Rowe with how much they've been overreacting. I mean, I think the most notable ones were the three-game losing streak with Wisconsin, Nebraska, and Iowa bunched up in there. Obviously, it wasn't in that order, but it's that type of, I guess you could say, it's spoiled. Going to football, we lost Alabama, we're terrible, it was 38-0, it wasn't even close. And then firing the mentions, anyways, at least of firing the coordinators, even though it was Harlan Barnett's first year and he dealt with a banged-up secondary and the offense dealt with a banged-up offensive line. It's the same concept, though, is you sit there and you expect a level of perfection, even though we know that this Michigan State basketball team, as long as Izzo's had control of it, they've not really been perfect, at least until March.
Yeah, and I think that this is the funny thing about that is that I believe this has been, from start to finish, one of the most consistent performing Michigan State teams, in recent memory. It's not one that got off to a slow start and had to find themselves and then came together in March and made a big run. It wasn't a team that, all they really did have was they had their little flutter in the middle of the season, the three-game losing streak that you mentioned. And, pretty much everybody is going to have that at this day and age. I mean, the teams going border to border, start to finish, it just doesn't happen. Even Kentucky, last year ended up coming up short of that. So, they've been very consistent. And Izzo even mentioned that after the game on Sunday, that he thought that the team's been, for the most part, pretty consistent overall. And that includes losing Denzel Valentine for a part of time.
Yeah, and that's about the time of the losing streak. It wasn't during the entire thing, but it takes a while to get a player who does so much for the team back into the swing of things. And so that, I think, had an impact on the Nebraska and Wisconsin games, just because it did take Valentine a little bit of time to, you know, get back to 100%. But the reason for that overreaction was the slow start. It's kind of been a common theme. Valentine said that he wasn't able to handle the pressure against Purdue. He struggled again early against Indiana. What does Michigan State need to do to correct that?
Yeah, it's been kind of the one thing all year that's really been a negative, and at times it looked like they had gotten past that, and then, you know, the Purdue game happens, and that was, you know, really, with the exception, really since the losing streak, I thought that was the only real stretch that they've played where they weren't getting back to what they had been doing, where they were really outplayed for a considerable amount of time. That first half against Purdue was they just got completely outplayed, and they were able to make up for it by coming out, you know, like gangbusters in the second half. You know, game goes to overtime and they lose, but it's hard to find it, to really pinpoint a reason why it happens. And I don't know if I'd go as far as to say the Indiana game was, as much as they got off to a slow start, it was kind of like both teams made a couple of back-and-forth runs, and then Michigan State
right.
just ended up making the extended run, you know, at the beginning of the first half and through the first, you know, half of the second half. But it's hard to know exactly what the reason is. Most of it is defensively. I think that they come out with a, you know, intensity on the defensive end, but then it kind of like – kind of wanes off, especially if a team makes a couple of tough shots or a couple of threes, then they kind of
like Rafael
it's almost
Davis.
Like instead of that exactly and instead of that getting them up and going and trying to guard harder, it almost seems to kind of deflate them and they get a little bit lazier, and then you see it affect them on the offensive side. If they can just figure out a way to just keep that level up through the start of games, I think they'll be in much better shape. And then they're not going to have to exert so much energy turning it up, you know, to 11 as Final Tap would do in the second half to try and come back from, you know, being down or whatever.
Right, and I think another issue with it is that a big part of Michigan State's offense is on the break. If the shots start to fall, Valentine can't push it, just given the fact that he has to exert so much energy on the defensive end, as well as shouldering pretty much the entire load on offense. And the lack of another true point guard, I mean, I think McQuaid's played very well this year as a freshman playing out of position. But without another true point guard, the tum-tum injury, I think that plays into it a little bit as well.
Yeah, I think so. And you know, Tom Crean mentioned after the game on Sunday that, you know, he thought the key to slowing down Valentine is you gotta put pressure on him, you gotta wear him down. And that's what Purdue was able to do, and that's why you saw Michigan State sputter to the finish in that game in regulation and why it went to overtime, because the offense came to a halt because Valentine was just looking gassed, and they weren't able to, Crean said that Indiana obviously was not able to do that. You know, the tum-tum thing, you know, he played a couple minutes in the first half, gave Valentine a little break against Indiana. I think they're going to try and work him in a little bit more, you know, down the stretch here. And hopefully, you know, the schedule should lighten up here for Michigan State the rest of the way. Hopefully there'll be more opportunities to get Valentine out and get him a little bit of a breather as we get ready to head into the postseason.
Yeah, I mean, as much as the schedule does lighten up because they aren't playing any of those ranked teams or borderline ranked teams, I mean, I guess you could say Wisconsin's making a push for it. They do have Wisconsin. They do have Ohio State, two teams who, more or less, they kind of have their backs up against the wall regarding what they need to do the rest of the way to guarantee a spot in the tournament. And so they're going to come out firing. Michigan State was getting everybody's best shot as it was. To play two teams like that, though, it's just that much more imperative that Michigan State does get off to a quick start. I want to talk to you a little bit about Baron here with me and Ryan. We kind of talked about it a little bit, but I wanted to get your thoughts on this. With the way McQuaid played this season and the way Alvin Ellis has played, at least over the last couple of games, working his way out of the doghouse, is it time for maybe the two of them to start taking some of Harris's minutes? I'm not saying put him on the bench like Matt Van Dyke or anything like that, but is it time that maybe his minutes just start decreasing a little bit? Because since Valentine's come back over the last six games, I know Valentine's been back a little bit longer than that, but once Valentine started getting into the rhythm and everything, over the last six games, Harris is only shooting 27%. He's not that great of a defender. At least Alvin Ellis can step up on that end, and he's not really made the mistakes that Harris has.
Yeah, you know, Harris continues to be one of those enigmatic players, and I think, you know, we've talked about him before and, you know, whether or not, you know, what he needs to do to get going and whatnot. But I think you got to keep him, you got to keep rolling with him. You know, I know Ellis has given you a little bit over the last few games, and he's shown that he can be a capable defender and that he can knock down a few shots, but I just don't trust him to consistently be in there taking those shots. And, you know, as poorly as Harris has shot the ball over the last, you know, six games or whatever you mentioned, he still has that capability. He still has that ability to be an explosive offensive player. And, you know, I think you got to keep going with him because he's the type of guy that I think if you do shuffle him down in the rotation and start to take his minutes away and he doesn't get as much time on the floor, I think he's the type of guy that it's going to affect him more mentally and that in the long run that's not going to be the best thing for him, and then that's in turn not going to be the best thing for the team. But, you know, I understand the thought, certainly, and the mistakes that Harris keeps making, you know, when you see him make those boneheaded plays or he's over-dribbling. The play the other day in Sunday's game that really – I was talking about it with a couple of the guys up in the press area was, you know, he shot faked and then dribbled and shot faked himself into getting the ball blocked. He had the defender moved on the shot fake. He dribbled, and then instead of taking the one dribble, putting the ball up, he dribbled, shot faked again, and the guy was able to recover or a help defender came over and ended up blocking his shot. And you just saw there'll be someone that has no confidence in their shot right now. But he's the guy, if he sees one or two go in, that can really get him going. So it's a tough question, and I think as you go forward, Izzo's going to have to figure out who the hot hand is and kind of go with him. But over the course of the next few games, I think that the goal should be to see if you can get Harris going, because ultimately he's the guy with the most talent out of those three guys.
Yeah, and I mean, I wasn't saying, like, you completely – bench him. I mean, you can still
right.
give him starts, but shuffle a couple more minutes Alvin Ellis's way, maybe a couple more McQuaid's way as well, just given the fact that he would also help lessen the load on Valentine. And so they do need to get him going. There's no doubt about that. But, I mean, you've talked about the boneheaded plays. I mean, how many can you make? How many times did he drive into A.J. Hammond's? To help him, to help him and tie his career high in blocks. I think at one point, one of those was I counted three straight possessions where there was a chance that he cost Michigan State 7 points in regulation. I think he threw the ball out of bounds on one play, missed Forbes wide open on another. Obviously, Forbes struggled. They need to get him going. He had about 15 feet between him and the next closest man, and then the pass to Deontay Davis where he had no room to come down with it didn't make the defender have to really do anything. And it's just stakes that you don't expect. I get he hasn't been in Izzo system for this long, but you don't expect for a guy who's in his fourth year of college basketball, if you want to count the year he had to sit out last year because of redshirting due to the transfer rule. So, again, I think I'm not going on a not trying to anyways go on a Harris bashing rant, but it's one of those situations where I think he just needs to start playing within himself a little bit more. He just forces the action a little too much. I think if he does get going, it's just going to be a bonus because Forbes, Valentine, and Costello, they have shown that they can carry the team on their backs if they need to.
Absolutely, and I really do think that Harris can be that piece that kind of puts him over the top. And I think that that's what, you know, a lot of people had as the expectation for him coming into this season. I know a lot of people maybe thought he was going to be more of like the number two guy. They didn't really know what to expect out of Costello. I thought that he was going to kind of be that complementary piece that had the ability to what I like from him that you don't see enough, and he doesn't. And when he does do it, sometimes it's out of control, like you mentioned in the Purdue game, where he shouldn't have been doing it. But his ability, he's one of the few guys that can get his own shot. And he can take the ball to the basket and beat guys off the dribble and you know, get to the line, which is something that he's not doing anymore, even though he's been a tremendous free throw shooter. He's only missed, like, two free throws in Big Ten play, but he's only taken two free throws in the last five games. So I think he needs to try and take the ball to the basket a little bit more, you know, but not obviously not just drive in wildly against, you know, Purdue wasn't the team to decide to start doing that against, and that was, you know, pretty confusing. But, you know, there are other teams you can do that against. You can beat your guy and you can get inside and you know, get to the line if you're having trouble scoring other ways, and especially when Michigan State's half-court offense bogs down. But You like you said, he's got to play within himself, and there's a difference between, you know, trying to do the right thing or trying to get something going and trying to do too much.
Yeah. Let's turn our attention to another rotational issue that Michigan State, that Tom Izzo's faced with. Kenny Goins, he's supposed to be out for a little while. The injury's not 100% clarified. It is something to do with his knee. Maybe out a month. Can Marvin Clark start living up to his expectation? Because Marvin Clark, it's been clear over the past month or so, maybe a little bit beyond that, that Javon Best has played his way out of the rotation. Can Marvin Clark be that backup power forward? Can he start living up to his expectation that he showed flashes of last year?
Yeah, Clark is a guy that, you know, I think he's going to be one of the people that he's probably going to be the biggest beneficiary of Goins missing time, because he's the guy that will most likely see the biggest increase in minutes as long as he doesn't, you know, fall completely on his face while doing it. I thought he did a good job the other day, and Izzo thought he did a good job the other day and was impressed with the way he played. He mentioned after the game, and I wrote in my game wrap piece that, you know, assistant coach Garland had come to him and said, hey, you know, you should play Marv today. He's been working hard. He's been studying film. He was up till 1 in the morning the other night watching game film and you know, trying to get better. So, you know, if Clark is you know, putting in that kind of work, and Izzo said he had a good couple days of practice, you know, he'll get the first shot, as we saw, and if he can do something with it, that'll be a, you know, a big help to him, and I think potentially offensively for the team as well. The guy who I think has really got to step up the most with Goins out is Gavin Schilling. He's got to find a way to stay on the floor and not pick up, you know, three fouls in 5 minutes, and he's got to provide some defense and some rebounding, because that's really what you were getting from Goins, was, you know, rebounding and you know, some solid, albeit not spectacular, defense most of the time. So, you know, Schilling is the guy that I really think has to step up his game and start showing a little bit more, because he's been a guy that's been kind of pushed down in the rotation as well.
Yeah, but the thing about Schilling is, over the last two games, I mean, he's played pretty well.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
One of the things I think the Clark situation does is it opens up the floor a little bit more for Aaron Harris. We talked about how he needs to drive. Clark, he's a stretch four. I mean, him and Goins are about the same height. Maybe Clark's just a little bit shorter. But Clark has the ability to step outside. And I think that if that's going to open up the entire offense, give Costello a little more room to operate, give Davis, if Davis ends up being the five for a second, if Schilling does get in foul trouble, if Davis comes in, gives him a little more room to operate, gives Harris, like I said, all that space to drive. And so it could really open things up a little bit more for Michigan State's offense. Defensively, Clark needs to play. And I know that this is a kind of a stretch. He needs to play like he did last year against Purdue. Because Marvin Clark played very well in that game, despite the height difference between him and Haas and Hammond. So I think it's going to add a little bit more to the offense. You're not going to get as much defense from him as you did Goins, but I think it does open things up a little bit more for everybody, and maybe this could help Harris get going a bit more. Let's focus our attention on Wisconsin because we got about 10 minutes left in the show. How's Michigan State recover from that loss? I mean, I get that they, you know, ran through Indiana most recently, but they did lose to Wisconsin. They lost at Madison. They lost a very close game. What needs to change from that game to this game?
Well, I mean, that game, they just kind of finished. I mean, that game was one that they basically gave away at the end of that game, and they've just got to finish better. And, you know, look, like we talked about the starts earlier in the game, or earlier in the show. Michigan State needs to get off to a good start in this game. You mentioned, you know, Wisconsin's a team that's got a lot to play for right now to try and get themselves into the tournament. They're also a team that's playing very well right now. They've won seven in a row, and that streak started by beating Michigan State back on January 17th. Since then, they've, you know, gone through some of the, you know, teams at the bottom of the Big Ten, but they've also taken out Indiana in overtime. They wrecked Maryland in Maryland last weekend. And, you know, they've had the last time they played was Saturday, so, you know, they've had some time off. But they need these wins. These are big wins for them. And looking ahead at their schedule, you know, Michigan State, they have Iowa coming up, and then they have Purdue at the end of the year. So, you know, they've got three tough games of their last six, and they also play Michigan coming up. So, you know, any of these wins they can get against, you know, these higher-ranked teams that are going to show up on their resume to try and get them in, because they were 9-9 and looked dead in the water and 1-4 in the Big Ten. Now they're 16-9, 8-4 in conference play, and they got a chance to play themselves into the tournament, you know, maybe before the Big Ten tournament, if they can pick up a couple more of these marquee wins down the stretch. So Michigan State needs to be ready and needs to be ready to play a full 40 minutes and can't, you know, go into prevent defense at the end of the game, and they can't get off to a slow start. They got to play a full 40 minutes because Wisconsin sure as heck has been playing well recently.
Yeah, going back to the Michigan State game against Wisconsin, MSU struggled slowing down Bronson Koenig and Nigel Hayes as they combined for, what is it, 52 of their 77 points. Can MSU slow down? Nigel Hayes is a tough stop. He's a perimeter guy. I think that that's where Clark's going to end up having to come into play, is he's someone who can go inside and outside without going to have the ability to guard a little bit better on the perimeter than everybody else. Costello can't really step out there. Schilling can't. Davis is a liability out there. I think that Clark guarding Hayes is going to be big. But can they slow down a Koenig without Tum-Tum?
I think they can. I think that the other perimeter defenders have stepped things up recently. And if he really gets off to a hot start, I wouldn't be surprised if they shuffle Valentine towards him a little bit. I mean, Valentine's been guarding guards the last couple of games a little bit more. It's not an ideal matchup, obviously, but, you know, there's not really someone else that – you know, Valentine is going to have to specifically step up and handle other than that. The other weird thing about that game back in Madison was, remember, that was the game of way too many free throws for Wisconsin and, like, none for Michigan State. They shot 20 more free throws than the Spartans in that game, and they don't usually get to the line that often. So, obviously, they need to not foul. And Hayes shot 10 by himself. Ethan Happ had 13 free throw attempts in that game, so I don't know what's going on with that. But that tells me that the front line of Michigan State needs to defend these guys, but they need to do it without fouling, which is why, you know, maybe Clark on Hayes not a bad idea. You know, Schilling just seems like he might end up being a guy that puts Hayes at the line a lot. But, you know, we'll have to see. The fact that Hayes can step out and knock down those outside shots really does make him a tough guard. And that's one of the reasons why you probably see him get to the line more than some of the other guys on that team, is because you end up with those mismatches.
Wisconsin's just been shuffling these guys in and out for years. The Kaminskis, the John Lures, and it goes back a ways. Drawing blanks on some of the other guys who have been able to step up like that. But
I just tried to forget about all of it.
Yeah, they make things very interesting on the inside in regards to that. Can MSU, I mean, you talked about avoiding the foul. Is there a way to maybe get Wisconsin in a little more foul trouble? Because this really isn't that deep of a Wisconsin team as opposed to years past. They've played only two bench players more than 10 minutes in the last game. Ultimately, that does happen in bigger games, and that does happen in closer games, as Michigan State kind of did the same thing. Goins and Forbes were the only guys coming off the bench that game that had double-digit minutes, but you don't see a lot past Ilekanig and Masha and off the bench. Is there a way where Michigan State can get these guys into foul trouble?
Yeah, I mean, that's not one of their strengths. I mean, when you look at the numbers, you know, getting to the free throw line is not one of the things that Michigan State, you know, really does well this year. It's really been something they haven't done well for the last couple of years, and part of that is because they're such a perimeter-oriented team. You know, I think that we talked about, you know, Harris, maybe this might be a decent game for him to try to get into the basket more, especially if Clark is in the game, like you mentioned, or there's more room to operate down low. I mean, you know, it's not a tremendous shot blocking or not a really huge team. Wisconsin isn't. So, you know, that could be one way to do it. But, you know, rather than getting them in foul trouble and dipping into the bench that way, if they're not going to run very deep and they're going to try and run you basically five, six, maybe seven guys out there the majority of the game, that's where getting that fast break going can really help, and you can wear them down so that they don't have enough left in the tank at the end of the game to make the big play, make the big shot, or make the comeback.
So do we see
right,
more tum-tum
exactly.
Then?
I think it'll really just depend on how well he feels.
Yeah, because Izzo said it was a threshold, a pain threshold thing that was slowing him down. It wasn't anything major, or it wasn't his play or anything like that. And that's one of the things that people don't understand. There's a lot more to offense than putting points on the board. And that's why Tum-Tum's out there. He pushes the break. He penetrates the zone, which Michigan State struggled with this year. He takes that pressure off of Valentine, because even with McQuaid out there, he's still not a true point guard. So that's obviously the story to follow. Is you got a quick prediction for us?
I think Michigan State gets it done. They avenged the loss up in Madison, and you know, they've been playing a lot better. I think that, you know, game starts out close, but I see them winning by, you know, 8 to 12 points in this one.
All right, hey Matt, thanks for coming on, man.
Always, no problem.
That does it for us today. For Matt Hepner, I'm Tyler Hayward. You've been listening to the iSports MSU Red Cedar Report.